From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, following the recent bombings in New York and New Jersey, national security has taken a central role in the heated-up rhetoric of the presidential battle between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. We'll talk to NPR's national security correspondent David Wellner about terrorism and the campaign. Then at 9:30, we discuss the life and times of major San Francisco community activist and political mover and shaker Rose Pack, described as the godmother of Chinatown. She died on Sunday at the age of 68, and we'll look back at her influence and legacy. It's all coming up next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Bombings over the weekend in New York and New Jersey have renewed focus on the national security positions of presidential hopefuls Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. On Monday, Clinton slammed Trump's campaign rhetoric and said Trump is being used as a recruiting sergeant for terrorists and called for a surge in intelligence. Meanwhile, Trump called for a radical departure from the current administration's anti-terror policies, but without offering any specifics. We talk in this Forum segment to NPR's national security correspondent David Wellner about where the candidates stand on the issue of national security. And welcome, David Wellner, to the program. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be here.
I guess the place to begin before we start talking about the candidates is what we know at this point, and perhaps you can just brief us on that. I know some notes were taken that were essentially taken in a journal by Ahmad Khan Rouhani, that suggested that he was concerned about killing Muslims or Muslims being killed, about Al-Qaeda and so forth. This seems like a lone wolf, and it seems like someone who was radicalized.
It seems like that. One of the things they've found is that he apparently had traveled to Afghanistan and Pakistan between 2011 and 2014. A Democratic congressman from New Jersey says he was contacted in 2014 by Rahami about bringing his Pakistani wife to the United States. He described the exchange between them as being fairly nasty. But it's not clear whether or not she's come. These papers that you referred to apparently were found on his blood-spattered body. The papers were splattered. And there's a reference in them to an American-born Muslim cleric, Anwar al-Awlaki, who was the first U.S. citizen to be killed by an American drone 5 years ago next week.
In Yemen.
His son was killed two weeks in Yemen, exactly. His son was killed 2 weeks later. And Awlaki has been perpetrators of terrorist attacks in San Bernardino and Orlando referred to while he's dead. His teachings have lived on online. And that's, I guess, the connection that authorities see right now with him.
So the candidates are talking in the meantime about vetting people coming into this country and about immigration and about borders. But the concerns are still, at least in this case and a number of other cases, with people getting radicalized outside of the United States and the Internet.
That's true, but it's very hard at this point to know exactly at what point Rahami became radicalized, whether he learned to make bombs during his trips to Afghanistan and Pakistan, or whether this was something that he learned to do reading the publications of Al-Qaeda online. There are detailed instructions on how to make bombs, and the Tsarnaev brothers in the Boston Marathon bombing also used those instructions in their bombings, which also used pressure cookers.
We're talking, if you've just joined us, with David Wellner, who is NPR's national security correspondent. He's with us from the nation's capital. And David, let's see if we can outline what each candidate has put forward here in the light of this recent, it could have been a far worse tragedy, and the people in Chelsea, about 29 were injured, nobody killed, but there were blasts that went off in New Jersey as well, a couple of them. And Trump's called for extreme vetting. At this point, I'm not even sure what extreme vetting means.
Do you have that's true. I think he's called for other things such as going and knocking the hell out of them over there. That's about as specific as he's gotten in terms of how to deal with future threats, which he says are going to continue and that there are going to be more and more of them. Now, the vetting of immigrants, presumably of Muslims, is something that he's, of course, called for. He's actually called for barring the entry of Muslims and hasn't really disavowed those previous calls. Hillary Clinton is also calling for tough vetting. Already, it takes between 18 and 24 months for somebody from a place like Syria to be approved for entry to the U.S. as a refugee because of the tougher vetting standards that are in place right now. But there are people who have gotten in the past. Yesterday, the Inspector General at the Department of Homeland Security put out a report that said that there are more than 800 people who were given U.S. citizenship, even though they had orders to be deported from the country because there had not been digital copies made of their fingerprints. Things like that crop up, and I think are likely to be used by the Trump campaign to say that the system that we have in place is inadequate for dealing with these refugees. And this comes at an interesting time, too, with the UN General Assembly in New York and President Obama convening a summit on the refugee crisis. And the Obama administration is looking at increasing the number of refugees the U.S. accepts. 85,000 is the level it's set for this year. They want to increase that to 110,000. And Trump's supporters are accusing Hillary Clinton of wanting to bring in more than 500,000 refugees. She's not said that, but they're basing that on the fact that the Obama administration is calling for a higher number of refugees. And this is all in the context of the suspects in both the Minnesota stabbing on Saturday in St. Cloud and also Rahami. Both of them were born abroad and came here as children with immigrant parents. And so I guess it's a very fraught situation, and with the first debate scheduled 6 days from now, I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about that next Monday night.
It may, in fact, dominate, though there are certainly other issues domestically and so forth to talk about. But in terms of foreign affairs, Hillary Clinton is the one with the reputation for being more of a hawk. Trump has talked about interventions as if they should not exist, although at the same time, like you said, he's talked about bombing the hell out of them, meaning ISIS, I guess, and how we should go after those who taunt our soldiers. But there's, when you think, for example, about airstrikes in Syria, or you think about surveillance with Silicon Valley, you think more of Hillary Clinton.
That's true. I think back to what you just said about Trump, if you look at what he actually proposes to do in terms of dealing with these threats, he uses language such as you have to hit them much harder over there. We're going to have to do something extremely tough over there. That's something he said to Fox News yesterday. But no specifics. I mean, he actually sounds in his rhetoric like he's more of a hardliner than Hillary Clinton is. However, if you go to their websites, it's interesting. Hillary Clinton has several pages of proposals for dealing with terrorism and keeping the homeland safe, as she calls it. Specific proposals, everything from tougher vetting of immigrants to working with Silicon Valley and social media to detect online radicalization and discourage future recruiting, things like that. Trump is not specific at all, but I think that if you look at Hillary Clinton's record, she has voted in Congress as a senator in favor of the Iraq invasion and of Afghanistan as well, and she, as Secretary of State, strongly pushed for the bombing of Libya. Trump, as a businessman, has no record of any of that. And while he's criticized those U.S. interventions, his saying that we have to be much harder over there seems to suggest that he would want to step up the U.S. campaign in these countries or get somebody else to do it.
Well, he's on record as saying that he has a secret plan as far as ISIS, but we haven't heard any of the details of that. And last time I heard secret plan, it was Richard Nixon for getting out of Vietnam. But Trump has also said, for example, that there are many, initially after this attack, that there were many foreign connections and that the weekend attacks had foreign connections, said this, I think, out of whole cloth initially. But he also said that the police have failed to act against terrorist suspects because of political correctness. And where's the evidence for that?
Well, he cited no direct evidence of this. He did get an endorsement from the Fraternal Order of the Police over the weekend. They seem to feel that he's more favorable to them. But where he's hearing that the police are not acting on information because they're afraid of being politically incorrect, who knows? I mean, it's another thing that he's thrown out there without offering any evidence to back it up.
I'm going to open our phone lines. This is a half-hour segment, so if you want to go on record here and if you want to join the program, I suggest you call us now. Our toll-free number is available, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Again, we're talking to David Wellner, the NPR national security correspondent. And really, the question for you, our listeners, is in this campaign, who do you trust more on Homeland Security and why? I'll throw that out, but also invite you to join us with whatever's on your mind in relation to the topic we're talking about, which is the spotlight on national security after the bomb blasts in both New York and New Jersey and the stabbings in Minnesota. Toll-free number to call is 866-733-6786, and you can call us now and let us know your thoughts or raise any questions you might have. Again, that number is 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments immediately onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We do want to hear from you, so please feel free to join the program. And David Wellner, before I begin taking calls and emails, we're learning just today that Rahami's father told the police back in 2014 that his son was a terrorist, and this has prompted a review by federal agents, but at the time. But what happened to it? I mean, that's really the question.
That's a good question, and I think that they're going to be looking at why there wasn't anything done at the time. And also, there's a lot of interest in finding out whether he, in fact, was a lone wolf acting alone, or whether there are connections to others either here or abroad. These are all still open questions.
Forgive me. The assumption was that he was operating alone because they found him kind of curled up, in other words, not with a safe house that would have been provided by a cell or anything along those lines.
That's true. At the same time, that doesn't mean that he didn't have connections with anyone else. He happened to be found alone and unprotected. But of course, until they investigate this further, I think it's going to be hard to say definitively whether, in fact, this was just one man who was carrying out these attacks.
One more quick question for you, David. And Brexit was certainly major in terms of the analogies that were made here. And I only bring that up because there are a lot of analogies now being made to particularly Germany, where many refugees under Merkel have been accepted, and it's hurt her politically.
Yes.
And the assumption is that it's probably going to hurt Secretary Clinton because she is asking for a lot of refugees. And, you know, you've got Donald Trump's son saying it's like a bowl of Skittles. If you got four bad ones, you have to beware.
Yes, an unfortunate comparison, but one that the Trump campaign is standing by.
One that has instituted a lawsuit, by the way. He's talking about poison Skittles. They weren't happy about that.
Yes. Well, I think, indeed, Angela Merkel has been hurt by her support for bringing more refugees into Germany. But I think that this raises a basic question in the campaign. We see a stark difference between the two candidates. Hillary Clinton standing by a long tradition of the United States of accepting refugees from wars abroad. But at the same time, we have a long tradition in this country of certain nativism, where there's been a lot of pushback against bringing refugees from war-torn areas, majorities in the country going back to the 1930s when Jews were trying to flee Hitler's Europe. Americans did not want them in. In 1958, with the Hungarian uprising and the Soviet invasion, again, they didn't want them in. With the Vietnamese boat people, with the Cuban Marielitos, we have lots of examples of where desperate people sought refuge in the United States, and public opinion was squarely against it. So I think Trump is aligning with that and pitting himself against Hillary Clinton's more principled, sort of high-minded stance, but it's one that, in fact, is politically risky for her.
And we're going to go to your calls here. Our first caller is Tony, joining us from Fort Hood, Texas. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hello, how's it going?
Thank you.
Okay. I'm a disabled veteran with a tour in Iraq, and it seems to me that Donald Trump's rhetoric is only feeding into what ISIS and other radical extremists are saying about the country. Why has nobody really called him out on that? And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Thank you for that, Tony. Actually, Hillary Clinton called him out and said he's being used as a recruiting sergeant for terrorists. David, yeah?
Yes. I think you could make the argument that by kind of stirring fears in the United States and stoking people's anxiety about terrorist attacks, that Trump is playing into the hands of people who want this country to feel very insecure and to possibly overreact and bring even more recruits into their folds. This is something that Hillary Clinton is trying to call out, but I think lumping him in as with ISIS recruiters may be going a bit too far, especially for Trump supporters who think this is just outrageous that she's saying this thing.
Well, on the other hand, Clinton supporters thought it was pretty outrageous to say that Hillary Clinton was the founder of ISIS. So we have a campaign that has sunk to those kind of levels. But let me bring more of our callers in. Here we go to Julia next. Julia, you're on the air.
Hi there. Great conversation. And I just wanted to say that I guess I don't understand the question about Homeland Security and who we would feel safer with in terms of being in charge of Homeland Security. I feel like it's a false question, because imagine if you were to go to a neurosurgeon because you needed to get a brain tumor removed. Would you go to one who had no experience or one who had some experience? If those were your choices, it seems to me that the news media sort of wants to make Trump and Clinton equal in some way, but it's clear that they're not, and why aren't we talking about that more?
Well,
I can take a comment off here.
You just did talk about it, and certainly the Clinton campaign has tried to emphasize her experience as well as the inexperience in any way of Donald Trump. But looking at a question here from Skip, if I go to you on this, David Wellner, who says, why are we importing 110,000 Syrian refugees whom the FBI director admits we cannot adequately screen, not to mention the costs the American taxpayers will have? Why not follow the Canadian model? Families only, no single men, 8,000 annually, all costs privately funded.
Well, for one thing, James Comey, the FBI director, said in testimony to Congress that he could not guarantee that they had all of the information they needed for background vetting. For some of the Syrian refugees, there is information. For others, there isn't. It's not automatic that all who apply are admitted to the United States. We are saying, I guess the United States has set a level of 10,000 Syrian refugees for this year, and Hillary Clinton is saying that we should be taking more. But these presumably would be people who are vetted, people for whom there is sufficient information to let them into the country. I don't think this is just a case of that anyone who shows up is allowed to come in.
But vetting is very difficult. The fact of the matter is that the last caller mentioned men as opposed to families or single men and so forth. A lot of these men could have been fighting Assad, and they could have been certainly on the side of, ISIS or al-Nusra or something. They could be, how do you vet that? It seems to me that it presents some enormous problems.
Right. If you look at the demographics of the refugees from Syria, there are very, very few of them who are of fighting age, from, say, 16 to 25, and males. They are the vast majority of these refugees are women, children, older people, and again, it, as I said before, it takes 18 to 24 months just to screen them. So you may raise the numbers that you're setting for how many people will be allowed in, but it's actually going to take quite some time for that to happen. And there is no guarantee that somebody who might be a former fighter would get into the country. I think that the level of confidence has to be somewhat high that these are not people who would be causing trouble in the United States.
We're getting some anti-Trump comments. Laurel tweets, I think the election of Donald Trump in itself will increase attacks in the United States. Another listener, Sean, says Donald Trump expressed anger that the suspect is receiving medical treatment, continuing to demonstrate his view of society and civilized view of society do not match in any way. And let me get another caller on. Paul, you're on. Morning.
Good morning. I'm a former newspaper journalist, and I just wanted to encourage you and all other journalists to be a little more aggressive with calling out candidates when they make statements that just basically come out of nowhere. I know we need to remain unbiased and equal, but I think that, especially in the current climate, we need to be more forthright with not saying I'm not sure where they get this information, but just to simply say that there is no evidence that this is true or that it's actually false.
No, I say hear to that.
Excuse me, Michael, I'm going to have to cut in because the building here at NPR headquarters is being evacuated. I don't know if it's a fire or what, but we're all being told to get out immediately. So I'm going to have to say goodbye and thank you for inviting me to
well, I hope everything is okay. Let us know, please.
I hope so, too. Okay.
In the meantime, thank you. That's David Wilna. I hope everything's all right. We're going to go into more of your calls, though. We got a Charlottesville, Virginia caller. Daniel, hi.
How you doing?
Okay, thank you.
Good. You know, I'm just listening to what's going on and what y'all are talking about and kind of what I'm thinking about these days with this election is kind of, you know, just even looking at, you know, the two candidates that we have and kind of saying this is kind of a failure of our democracy. And where if we're going to consider ourselves a liberal democracy, we have to take these immigrants. And whether or not we actually are a liberal democracy, that's kind of up for debate. But people, you know, it's supposedly widely accepted that we are, you know. And my education at the University of Virginia, you know, I was a government major, just graduated. And, you know, I look at this situation and I'm flabbergasted. You know, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I thank you for those remarks, and it's good to hear from you again. I hope everything's okay in the NPR building. We do have more comments that I'd like to get to before we close off this segment. Again, strongly critical of Trump for the most part. Pete tweets, your normalization of Trump, including the latest Skittle report, is depressing. Trump is our greatest present threat to national security. And Rick writes, I think the question, this is an anti-Hillary comment, I think the question for our great nation is how can we have a presidential candidate who has a long history of playing with the truth, i.e. a serial liar? The question missed over 20-plus years are not a vast right-wing conspiracy. Hillary and her husband play with the truth in very crafty ways, and so far they seem to have escaped penalties each time. Well, we've indeed come to the end of this segment. I want to thank you, our callers, and thank David Wilna. And sorry we didn't have more time with him, but glad that we did have the time that we had. And we're going to have more time to talk about something really unrelated. Rose Pack died, who was certainly known as one of the major figures in community activism here in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we're going to talk about her with former Mayor Willie Brown and with Scott Schaefer. And with you, our listeners, we'll also have Gordon Shin on the phone. Stay tuned for that. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.